Hello everyone, welcome back. It is around 6 in the evening of February 2nd, 2016. So I've just gotten home from work and we'll see if I can get this monthly podcast recorded. It's going to be a busy week. So I just spent the day selling materials to Hutterite women, Anishinaabe women, Inuit women, all in the process of making mukluks and moccasins. So that was kind of an interesting day. The Inuit woman was down from Rankin Inlet, which is quite a few hundred miles further north than Winnipeg. So she was saying how wonderfully warm it was down here. We're only at about 10 below Celsius right at the moment, so she was saying it was nice to get away from the 40 below and the wind chill factors that she's been experiencing much higher north in Canada. It's been a busy week. Last week and a half, they discovered bed bugs in our building, so I had to clear out all of my furniture and make sure it was ready to be sprayed by people coming in, and all the baseboards had to be sprayed. I had to wash all of my clothes, which I do on a regular basis, but but I had to wash everything. However, it's looking good. They didn't really discover any signs of anything in my apartment, so I've probably lucked out there. And what else? Last night was kind of interesting. I was listening to a bit of the results of the Iowa caucus in the United States. So it looked like Ted Cruz is a little bit ahead of Donald Trump, which, if there's anything more frightening than the idea of Donald Trump being president of the United States, it would be that Ted Cruz is the president of the United States. So we'll see what's going to happen over the next while. Anyway, I've had a few people write in with questions. We'll get down to that shortly. As always, I want to thank anyone who has sent in questions or comments. Words of appreciation. I had a few people write in to express their appreciation for what we've been offering on this website. I'd like to thank those who sent in donations, and I'd like to thank those who ordered Budescence through the website. And as always, I want to thank Marcus Fellows for establishing this website in the first place, and for continuing to post these podcasts every month. For anyone new to the website, or for anyone who's perhaps having difficulty relating to any of the responses that I'm offering in these monthly podcasts, if you're interested, you might want to check out the two main talks on the website. If you go to the Listen drop-down menu, somebody informed me that it's not a listen Dropbox, it's a listen drop down menu. So I'll try to remember that. I'm not all that experienced with the various lingo of the internet or computers. So if you go to the drop down menu under the listen title and you scroll down to the tomb or to the title talks, you'll find the two main talks, one which is titled An Overview of Spiritual Awakening and the other which is titled Acknowledging the Moment. And they will give you the broadest overview of what I'm offering here. As always, keep in mind that whatever I offer here is simply for your consideration. I'm not asking that you believe it, or I'm not stating that this is the one way everybody should look at life. It's merely for your consideration, and it is one of the expressions of existence. There are a number of people who generally see life in this way, But again, it's just for your consideration. It has to be considered in relation to your actual experience of life, and you take from it whatever you take from it. All right, I had the first person write in to say, "Hello, Daryl, I hope you are well. It seems to me that the non-dual perspective you describe points at the recognition that there is only the dancing, moving, flowing, happening of the moment, and no separate me that is observing it. For the sake of communication, you sometimes add that the moment is composed of seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking, but you are quick to point out that the moment is truly indescribable and not separated into seeing versus hearing versus touching, etc., nor is the moment separable into anything else. My experience conforms to that description, but includes one additional aspect. In addition to seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking, there is also what I will call something else. Recognizing that we are still just barking, I will continue. Something else is distinguished from, but not separate from, seeing, hearing, touching, etc., by the fact that something else is completely unchanging, while the rest is always changing. This is not a theory, but an observation, same as the observations that form is always changing, and hence is not really form, and that there is no observer separate from the moment. Here is one way to observe what I call something else. If you sit with your eyes closed for a moment, one of the presentations of the moment will be a cluster of sensations which typically are labeled my body. If you will permit me to say that the moment knows itself, then in this moment it is knowing the sensations of the body. It, the moment itself, would also be knowing sounds, smells, thoughts, etc., but let's focus on the sensations. Knowing, which is the moment knowing itself, does not end at the edge of the cluster of sensations. In fact, there is no edge to the cluster of sensations. Knowing, which is the moment knowing itself, extends beyond the sensations to a region which is completely unchanging. This is directly observed. I am calling this unchanging region something else. This unchanging region in which the sensations of the body appear is the same unchanging region in which the sights, sounds, smells, thoughts, etc. appear. I fully agree with you that the moment is not composed of separate parts, but you do use different words, seeing, hearing, etc., to point at different qualities that are arising in the moment. Your list fails to include something else, which is also present, but unlike everything else in the current happening. Something else isn't happening, it just is. Unlike everything else on your list, something else is not on its way to becoming, ironically, something else. My point so far is that the current moment includes seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, and something else. Since you have had the life experience that you have described, I find it nearly impossible to believe that you don't already know exactly what I'm talking about. If, however, the something else which I have described is not part of your experience, I hope you will take 3 to 5 minutes to sit with your eyes closed. You are welcome to stand or lay down too, just don't try it while you're driving, and see for yourself rather than simply dismissing my comments as mere intellectual barking. I'd love to hear your comments in response to this. Ruff, ruff, peace and love." Okay, so this question came in the earlier part of January, and I sent a quick response to this person. Basically, after considering what he was describing, I felt that really any differences in our experience probably related more to semantics, just the different use of words. So, if I sit down and I close my eyes to simply acknowledge the happening of the moment, then generally I just have a sense of a dark kind of spaciousness along with certain energetic movements that I might call body sensations. Now, I can't just focus on the body sensations because I wouldn't be able to identify body sensations without them being compared to something else. So with sitting here with my eyes closed, the next basic thing that they get compared to is just this dark sense of spaciousness. Now, that dark sense of spaciousness would be related to what we might call seeing. So it's totally impossible for me to just focus on body sensations. There is a larger sense of knowing, which, you know, I could generally point to as the fields of seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. But in this moment, when I'm focusing on the body sensations, the next most obvious sensation would be this dark spaciousness, which I could refer to generally as the field of seeing. Now, I don't really have the sense that that dark spaciousness is unchanging, because in my own case, there are variations of light in that dark spaciousness. And in relation to focusing on the energetic movement of what we would call body sensations, those body sensations seem to fill the entire spaciousness, the dark spaciousness. And the spaciousness is not unchanging, because in the general areas where I'm feeling some kind of movement of energy and not focusing on the sense of a dark spaciousness, there, you know, the focus on the energetic dance of what we would call body sensations doesn't leave a sense of dark spaciousness. Now, those energetic movements will move on, and then in that space that they once occupied, it now seems like dark spaciousness. So it's not the case that the spaciousness is unchanging. It's that I have a general experience of moving energy and areas of dark spaciousness, but the whole thing seems to be shifting. So it's not the case that the dark spaciousness is unchanging. When an area of that dark spaciousness is filled with energy, it seems like energy. When the energy moves on, it seems like dark spaciousness. So I don't have the sense of some dark spaciousness just sitting here separate from or containing the movement of energy. I have a general field of the movement of dark spaciousness and energy. So I would agree that the dark spaciousness, or I would agree that the energetic pulsations of the body sensations have no specific boundary to them. And it's also the case that the dark spaciousness has no specific boundary to it. So just to clarify, if I sit down to acknowledge the happening of the moment, for me, it's just one big happening. And yes, it's possible for the focus to come to certain portions of this happening, and compare them to other portions of the happening, but really it's just one big happening. So I will initially, you know, I will in general make reference to that big field that we would call awareness, or that we would call knowing, by saying that generally it's what we would call seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. But by that, I'm not making reference to seeing a specific object. When I use the term seeing, I'm talking about the whole field of knowing that we would call seeing. And then as well, the whole field of knowing that we would call hearing, the whole field of knowing that we would call touching, and so on. Even though it's all just one big happening, we generally point to this big field of just the feeling that something's happening, this big field of what we might generally call knowing, with these other general titles, seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. And then within those general fields, we have specific, what we would call specific objects of seeing, objects of hearing, objects of touch, so specific sensations, body sensations. So when I close my eyes, it's totally impossible to really separate any of these elements from any of the other elements. And if I try to focus on something like physical sensations, it automatically is bound up with this general sensation that I would call seeing. So with my eyes closed, there's a general sensation of dark spaciousness. And then the particular body sensations seem to be occurring within that dark spaciousness. So I would agree there seems to be something more than just the body sensations, but I wouldn't call it something else. It is just part and parcel of this larger event. And I wouldn't agree that the spaciousness isn't changing, because as I pointed out, one area of spaciousness that's filled with some energetic movement isn't coming across as just dark spaciousness. And then in the next moment, it seems to reappear as dark spaciousness. So the spaciousness itself is moving and shifting and changing. I don't experience it as some unchanging container of body sensations. And this person who wrote in went on to say that this something else that is being referred to isn't happening. It just is. It's not on its way to becoming something else. But as I point out, in my own experience, it is on its way to becoming something else. One moment it seems like just a general feeling of dark spaciousness. Another moment it seems to be filled with, or it seems to be replaced by energetic physical sensations. And you can see that just in this last moment, my inclination would be to say that dark spaciousness is filled with energetic sensations. So we have a tendency to immediately relate to that dark spaciousness as some kind of container, when in fact we don't actually even experience some dark, unchanging container. When I use the word happening, when I just make mention of the happening of this moment, it includes all of the apparent sensations, all of the apparent knowing, what we would call knowing or basic awareness. So from my experience, or in my experience, the word awareness, the word knowing, simply points to the basic feeling that we have that something's happening in this moment. And that's one big undivided happening. Now, this person is saying there is, if we focus on specific sensations, there's something bigger, and that simply is. It's not happening. But if I look in the dictionary, the word is very specifically points to being, and being is defined as, for something to be, it has to actually occur, and the most general synonym for something occurring is that it's happening. So for me, isness and happening don't really have much of a difference. They are basically synonyms. So as I point out, I wrote back to this person saying that my real feeling is that any differences that might seem to be there are probably related to just the different ways that we use some of these words. So I'd also like to mention that, in my consideration of everybody's usual stories of life, I will enter those stories and I will start to point out certain simple facts, like the fact that in our general stories of existence, we will say that everything is changing. So initially, I'm pointing to this general fact that we all have in our usual storylines. But ultimately, if we really consider that, if we really come to realize that all of the apparent things are moving and shifting and changing, then ultimately we come to something that never changes. The actual unformed happening of the moment is constantly unformed. Even though it appears to have forms, and then we say that those forms are changing, it's more the fact that the happening of this moment is an ever-present, unformed happening. Or you could say a constantly unformed feeling of presence. And here's where the use of words becomes really ridiculous, because the unchanging unformed, you know, it's always unformed, so it's unchanging, is also constant change. Like, we could label it as constant change, or we could say it's simply a constantly unformed presence. This is the difficulty of language, that we can take one experience and describe it in a number of different ways, refer to it in a number of different ways, and even though those different ways of describing it seem to be different, they actually mean the same thing. Constant change would mean that nothing ever changes. It would mean that whatever this is that is constantly changing is simply constantly without form. And if it has no particular form, then there's nothing there to change. There's no particular form there to change. So the whole intellectual approach to this just becomes absurd. It loses any practical value. It becomes gibberish. And if we say there is only what is, that it's totally indescribable, there's just here and now what is, it has to be a reference to something that's actually happening, because the dictionary interpretation, the dictionary definition of isness is to be. And to be means something that's actually occurring, and if something's actually occurring, it has to be actually happening. So again, you see, one of the most difficult aspects, it seems, of this non-dual sense of existence is that the average person is wanting to constantly cling to another intellectual interpretation rather than acknowledging the totally unexplainable happening of this moment. There's just this, and even that's saying too much. The moment we go into some kind of intellectual interpretation of whatever this is, it's incorrect. None of the labels are a true name, and if we're pointing to some apparent form, that's not a true description of existence, because none of the forms are stable. Whatever this is has no particular form. So in this, we're not actually left with some possibility of an intellectual interpretation. We're left with the vibrant occurrence. A totally unexplainable, vibrant, unformed feeling of presence. And even to use those labels are it's ultimately ridiculous to give it those names and make that kind of reference to it. So this is why traditionally these teachings are offered in two different ways. There's an intellectual aspect, in which we consider the limitation of our usual stories, but then there's the meditation aspect, in which the focus on stories is allowed to relax and we open to an acknowledgement of the larger event, in which case there's just the feeling of the movement, the vibrant movement of the moment, rather than attempting to describe it in some kind of intellectual, conceptual manner. So once there's the realization that all of the interpretations are incorrect in some way, we can come to that basic question, what is there when there's no thinking? And in that, at the end of that question, what is there when there's no thinking? At the end of the question, for an apparent moment, there's no intellectual interpretation, no concept, but there isn't nothingness. So what remains at the end of that question? Feel that, be that. And the next thought will arise as an expression of that. So that perhaps there can be a consideration that the movement of thought itself is a totally unexplainable happening. So the person who sent that question in wrote back in response, when I sent the note saying that I really think our differences are merely semantic, different use of words. This person wrote back to say that they considered that's probably true as well. So this person actually wrote back and said, because I've attributed my increasing happiness, they described how there's been an increasing happiness and the acknowledgement of the large space of awareness, which this person could now see that I was maybe referring to as dark spaciousness. When I closed my eyes, I would say I have this impression of a dark spaciousness. So this person said, because I've attributed my increasing happiness to the recognition of the space of awareness, dark spaciousness, and because I have not noticed that you speak much about dark spaciousness, unless you have been, and I've either missed those talks or misinterpreted talks that I've heard, I was prompted to write my original email. I can see that the process of disidentification as a separate limited entity and the knowing recognition of awareness may in fact be the same process. I'm still unclear on that. Since you spend a lot of time in your talks pointing out the fallacy of the notion that we are a separate limited entity, and the fact that you don't seem to spend a lot of time pointing at dark spaciousness may be a moot point. Thank you again for your care in responding to my email. If you ever find yourself near Buffalo, New York, and you'd like to get together for a cup of coffee, please let me know. Actually, just in relation to this last point, I do spend a lot of time talking about the fact that there's no way we can be a separate limited entity. But I also, in pretty much every one of these podcasts, I'm asking you, if you're interested, you might want to check out the two main talks on this website. And one of those talks is really simply an invitation to the big event of the moment. So what I'm presenting is a combination of both of these things. It's both a consideration that within our storylines, we can't possibly be a separate entity from the happening of this moment. And then it's also the direct acknowledgement that if you allow the focus to come away from your constant attempt to define existence and acknowledge the larger event of the moment, then we're dealing with something that's not a thought. And we're acknowledging the larger sense that something's happening. And in other people's jargon, they might refer to that as the larger sense of spaciousness of knowing. However, I don't want to call it the spaciousness of knowing. I don't want to call it anything. It's not the spaciousness of knowing. It's just what remains when the focus isn't entirely on description. There's a much bigger happening here. And ultimately, there's no way of saying what it is. It's not something that's separate from thought, and thought can't define it. All right, a second person has written in saying, hi, here's something that I've been struggling with for years. If you have some advice or a comment, I would like to hear it. I always keep coming back to your webpage and books because they're so intellectually undeniable. But in my life, there's this strange cycle of suddenly getting interested in praying or just sitting practice or inquiry or just trying to forget everything about spirituality and trying to be interested in normal people's stuff. That always ends up in a feeling of meaninglessness and depression, and I end up drinking too much. Then I start reading some spiritual books and get interested in praying, inquiry, or just sitting, or something like that, and once again think that I have finally found my way. And then the interest collapses, and I pick up another book from my library and find meaning in some other ism or meditation technique. And eventually, I end up thinking again that your stuff is the wisest stuff. I think that because of reading and listening to your stuff, I don't take this cycle so seriously anymore, and I know that life would be easier if I would live a more healthy life, and I think that's where I'm slowly going, to a more simple life, I hope. Well, anyway, I would like to hear what you have to say about this. Thanks. So the only comment I can that really kind of pushes itself forward is the fact that, yeah, this is one of the general expressions of existence, that there are many people who have this kind of love-hate relationship with spiritual things, or we have this moving, shifting situation where in certain moments in our life we're very interested in a spiritual inquiry, and then in the next moment we're not so interested in that. And for many, many years in my own life, it kind of bounced around like that, because essentially I don't see myself as a very spiritual person. I don't have any real interest in spirituality, but I have a great interest in acknowledging in a very simple way how my life is actually expressing itself. So, you know, I might read certain spiritual texts, and then I would read certain scientific texts, and then I would read certain psychological texts, and then throughout all of that, I would just get fed up with all of that reading and really explore meditation and relaxation and all of these things. It was just a mixed bag of things for many, many years. And it still is to some degree. I mean, I have periods of time where I really just enjoy the quiet happening of the moment, and I want to spend a lot of time just sitting quietly in my apartment. And then there's just the mysterious happening of the moment in a very quiet and subtle way. And then other times I just have no interest in connecting with that quiet, subtle happening of the moment at all. Like, I actually, there's great fun in kind of getting lost in thoughts and maybe reading something, although I very seldom read fiction anymore. I'm finding that more and more difficult. I can't really at the moment stand any kind of spiritual writing. I find it really obnoxious. And I find myself drawn more to, if I'm going to read, it will probably be a good piece of journalism on world events, or it will probably have something to do with the most recent discoveries of neuroscience or physics, something like that. But it's changing all the time, so. And then, just as this person points out, they have the feeling that somehow, even though this is kind of bouncing around all over the place, that somehow in general they're moving to a healthier lifestyle and to a simpler lifestyle. So that was the fact with my life as well. Although along the way I really had no way of knowing where it was going. And even now I have no way of knowing where any of it's headed. Right now at this time I live a very simple life, and it seems to be inclining more and more to what I feel to be healthy living. That's probably because I'm I'm well aware now of how certain habits over a lifetime have brought certain pains to my body. And so I'm kind of re-examining all of that and my diet and all the rest of it at this point. Seems to want to focus on what I might consider to be a healthier lifestyle. But who knows how long that's going to last. Or even if I do focus on a healthier lifestyle, who knows if I even am going to wake up tomorrow morning. All right, another person has written in to say, "Hi, Daryl. As I am writing to you, the weather app on my phone tells me that the temperature in Winnipeg is -9 degrees. Yikes. I'm sure at times cold and crisp air is an enjoyable event. Ice and snow also have their own fascinating magical flavor. A couple of questions, if I may, please. What is your feeling or thoughts about so-called spiritual transmission? The so-called transmission referred to between teacher and student, or in some cases a devotee. Is it all bullshit, or is it possible that something in fact could be taking place on an energetic yet subtle level? Also, in my exploration of Mahamudra, there was a saying I heard frequently, in the mind created by the mind. I think it refers to our experience and encounter of the phenomenal world. Is it possible we could be dreaming this whole thing up? It feels that way sometimes to me. Thank you, Daryl. Warm regards." So, cold and crisp air is enjoyable. And ice and snow also have their own fascinating magical flavor. So, absolutely. Last night I was out for a walk with a friend. We walked for a couple of hours. It was about 15 below. And we were down on the frozen river here. And the whole evening just had a really magical quality. The darkness of the night sky, the lights of the various buildings on the riverbanks. It really did have a very magical quality to it. So, what are my feelings or thoughts about so-called spiritual transmission? Spiritual transmission basically ultimately is just the acknowledgement of the happening of this moment as being totally unexplainable and simply occurring spontaneously. Everything simply occurring spontaneously. Now, how that seems to get transmitted from one person to another can vary. So, for instance, with certain people, I would discuss certain things intellectually. And in that discussion, there might be a realization of something in my own experience that was pointed to in the discussion and became very obvious, something I may not have looked at prior to the discussion. So there was a certain kind of transmission in that dialogue with someone who had also explored life in a very general way. But it's also the case that when I ran across Robert Adams, I'd been meditating for many, many years, and if I'd gone on a meditation retreat or I was spending a few hours on my own, simply acknowledging the happening of the moment, that I had a great deal of experience of a broad spaciousness, the real spacious aspect of the moment, what we would call a spacious aspect of the moment. And so it was just an open acknowledgement of the entire event of the moment. When I got together with Robert Adams, one of the things that was really obvious was that he was sitting in that openness. So I had the opportunity to be in the room that he would be speaking in before anybody else arrived, and he would be the first person to show up. So he would sit down and simply sit in a big armchair. But it was quite obvious to me he was sitting in this open acknowledgement of the entire moment, because when other people would walk into the room, the movement would attract the attention of his eyes, but then he would lose interest and go back to just an open acknowledgement of the entire space of the room. So just, you know, before he would even say anything, it was my, you know, what would you call it? Intuitively, I could simply see that he was sitting in this open spaciousness that I would also be sitting in a long period of meditation. And there was something in that that gave rise to a question in me, like, why would you not just sit in that open spaciousness of the moment, that open acknowledgement of the large happening of the moment? And so, without him even saying anything, I found myself just naturally pulled into that openness. So we could say that in that particular situation, there was a kind of energetic transmission, an energetic pull to that open acknowledgement of the entire happening of the moment. Ultimately, from this non-dual perspective, there can't really even be a transmission from one person to another, because ultimately the whole storyline about separate people is a fantasy. Everything that's occurring in this moment is one happening, an undivided happening. It's only intellectually that we divide it up into different aspects, because the happening of the moment seems to express itself in different ways. And so we focus on these differences and say that they're separate from the other aspects of the moment, when actually it's just one great unformed happening. So ultimately, there can't actually be transmission from one person to another. I mean, other people will say, oh, it's a transmission from big mind to big mind, or pure awareness to pure awareness, but there is no separation in what we would call pure awareness. It's just this happening. It's just one undivided happening. Or better yet, let's just drop the statements and say it's just this. To attempt to describe it is going to distort it somehow. The intellectual interpretations are never quite correct. There is no actual name for this. And to start to describe certain forms is already incorrect as far as any ultimate reality, because all the forms are changing. Even to say that there's awareness being aware of itself is ridiculous. The term awareness is a fantasy. It's not a correct label for whatever this is. And to say that this happening is both the consciousness and the object of consciousness is just a ridiculous statement. It's just, I mean, why not say it's a pink zebra too? Now, this person is also asked, they comment on, in their exploration of the Mahamudra, there was a saying that they heard frequently, and the saying is, in the mind created by mind. So the Mahamudra is a Buddhist teaching. In Buddhism, rather than call the unexplainable happening of the moment pure awareness, they will often call it mind with a capital M. So Buddha mind is just the happening of this moment, the unexplainable happening of this moment. So that includes everything you generally consider to be outside of you and everything that you generally consider to be inside of you. That is Buddha mind. That is mind with a capital M. It has no particular form. It's everything that's existing right now, everything that you seem to be aware of right now. That's Buddha mind. Now, in that unexplainable happening is created the concept of an individual mind, a personal mind, Daryl's mind, the Buddha's mind, the, you know, Charlie's mind, Susan's mind. So within Buddhism, they might make reference to the mind created by mind. So the intellectual concept of a small personal mind that's created in this larger unexplainable happening that in Buddhism they call mind with a capital M. So this person goes on to say, I think it refers to our experience and encounter of the phenomenal world. Is it possible we could be dreaming this whole thing up? It feels that way sometimes to me. Thank you, Daryl. So the Buddha was very clear. He would say, what is, so there's, you know, we all have the feeling that something's happening right now, the isness of the moment. So what is, but there isn't any description that applies to this. So he called himself the Tathagata, which generally means, I mean, literally it means one who is to thusness come or one who is to thusness gone. Generally, it just means somebody who's awakened to what actually is. And he said, you know, if there's an awakening to what actually is, a person no longer describes life in terms of physical forms, feelings, perceptions, mental activities, or states of consciousness. So they wouldn't actually be describing the happening of this moment in terms of mind or people or objects or consciousness or any of that. He stated outright that none of those descriptions actually apply to this. They're all a distortion of some kind. Now, that didn't mean that he never had what we would call a thought, or that you give up all thinking. It just means that you no longer attempt to describe some ultimate reality, to describe what actually is. You just give up the attempt of trying to describe what actually is, because what is can't be described intellectually in any kind of true way. So the feeling of that, you know, we all have the feeling that something's happening in this moment. We're not dreaming that up, but in our attempts to describe it, we come up with these fantastic stories of people that are born and dying, people that are directing their lives through a world, and we're basically dreaming that up. Because all of that is a distorted interpretation of this basic sense that something's happening right now. All of those descriptions are ultimately incorrect. The labels can't tell us what this actually is, and all of these descriptions of form aren't really ultimately telling us what this is, because we know whatever this is, all those apparent forms are changing. Ultimately, whatever this is, it has no form, even in this moment. All of these apparent forms are changing as I speak. Some slowly, some quickly, but ultimately they're all changing. All right, another person has written in to say, hi Daryl, I really hope you're going to comment on a comment you made in last month's question and answer session, a comment about when the big one comes, the big earthquake, following the 4.3 off the west coast of Canada in Victoria. Do you think a big one is coming? Thanks ahead of time if you do. So, yes, unfortunately there is a big one coming that's recorded in the geography of the West Coast. It's if you look at the layers of soil that have been laid down over the centuries, over the millennium, there is a record of the fact that you have two of the Earth's plates rubbing up against each other on the west coast of North America, and they are moving in opposite directions. They are resisting each other's movement, and every once in a while, the pressure builds to the point that they break free of each other's resistance, and so you get an earthquake. In general, you get these mild releases of pressure, but every once in a while, on a fairly regular basis, over the thousands of years that this has been going on, you get big releases of pressure, where the resistance to each other really lets go in a big way. So yes, there's another big one coming. When I lived in San Francisco back in the 80s, they were telling me it could happen anytime in the next 30 years. Here it is, 2016. They're still saying it could happen anytime in the next 30 years. So it's going to come. Who knows when it's going to come? I'm looking forward to Manitoba being the beach once the West Coast disappears. And that was a joke. I don't really believe that. All right. Lastly, a person has written in to say, "Hi, Daryl. I really enjoyed your January talk. Thank you. There's one thing I haven't heard you talk about, or maybe I've missed it, which I want to ask you about here. In my experience, I've noticed that as the belief in the fantasies have diminished and old conditioning has dissolved, the sense of presence has become quite palpable most of the time. That includes a rather strong sense of well-being, even when there are apparent problems or difficulties going on. There are other qualities it carries, such as a sense of fulfillment, completeness, joy, and love. Naturally, I'm very grateful this has become part of my experience, particularly after so many years of suffering. It seems to soften and lighten everything significantly. With that said, and with the fact that I resonate so strongly with your pointers, I'm wondering how you view this or what your experience is. Thank you. Warmest regards. P.S. Also, being that Robert Adams was a significant influence in your experience, do you agree with what he says below? This is an excerpt from his book, Silence of the Heart. So she's got an excerpt here that has a student asking Robert, or saying to Robert, "Robert, you're saying that it is the grace that flows from the silence that transforms us." And Robert replies, "Oh yes, true. Grace is already there. You simply have to be quiet enough to pick it up. When your mind is noisy, it picks up the vibration of the world, just like the pool of water. When the water is still, it reflects the moon and the stars. But when the water is noisy, it cannot do that at all. It reflects nothing. So when your mind is noisy, it reflects chaos, confusion. When your mind is still and quiet, it reflects your divinity." Okay, so basically the question is, basically this person has pointed out that as they've lost the belief in the general storylines that they've carried through their lifetime, and they've come to acknowledge the unexplainable happening of the moment, just the big happening of the moment, that's the general sense of presence has become quite strong most of the time. So the general sense of the big happening of this moment has become quite strong most of the time, and it also carries a strong sense of well-being even when there are apparent problems or difficulties going on. It also has certain qualities that you might label as fulfillment, completeness, joy, and love. So generally that's my experience as well, and it's the experience of many people who relate to this consideration of life. However, I don't know if that's ultimately the fact for everyone who relates to this perspective. I don't know if it's the case that for everyone who loses the belief in their usual viewpoints of existence and they come to acknowledge the larger happening of the moment, there has to be some sense of more of a fullness and less bother, a feeling of not really being bothered by these fantasies that we carry about us directing our existence and us being responsible for it and us being successful or being failures. There just isn't any strong interest in those storylines. And so there is a greater acknowledgement of the totally unexplainable happening of this moment. And by that, I don't mean that you sit around thinking, oh, this is a greater unexplainable happening of the moment. It's just there's less interest in the thought and more of an acknowledgement of the actual vibrant happening of the moment. So probably to get a more accurate sense of that, think the question, what is there when there's no thinking? And for a moment at the end of that question, there isn't any concept, but it's not a feeling of nothingness. There's the actual vibration of the moment. It's not a feeling of nothingness. It's a feeling of perhaps what we might call a vibrant liveliness. And then thought will come back as an expression of that vibrant liveliness, because the movement of thought itself is a vibrant, lively movement. It's a dynamic, moving and shifting and dancing. So in the acknowledgement of that larger event and moving away from this constant niggling intellectual attempt to divide it up, there is generally a greater sense of fullness. But now, how much any particular person is going to acknowledge that sense of fullness or completeness, or perhaps any accompanying feelings of joy and love, that varies from individual to individual. So I never set anything up as a particular carrot for everyone to pursue, because everyone's unique in all of this. And for one person, these might be elements that become very obvious. For others, it may be some other aspect of the unexplainable dance of the moment that carries more importance. But in general, we could say that if you relate to this larger unexplainable happening of the moment, and the focus comes away, the belief comes away from, you no longer believe the storylines, and there's an acknowledgement of the storylines also just being a mysterious happening, moving and shifting and dancing, then there will be some greater sense of fullness. There will be the acknowledgement this is just basically this, unexplainable vibrancy is constantly fulfilling itself. It's the expression of something that can't be explained, and there isn't any person making any of it happen. Each and every person is a portion of this expression. So in that acknowledgement of this great mysterious dance simply always expressing itself, it's always fulfilling itself. So whatever occurs in your life, whether there are difficulties or not, whether there are pains or not, it doesn't really matter. It's all an ongoing fulfillment of life's intrinsic nature. Now, that may also carry with it feelings of what we might call joy and love, because there's just a more intimate acknowledgement of the vibrancy of the moment and the fullness of the moment. And when we step away from the storylines in a strong way, it does seem to have a feeling of joy in comparison. And then as far as love goes, the acknowledgement that absolutely everyone is an expression of this totally unexplainable happening, this unexplainable vibrancy, you realize that no one is choosing to be the expression they are. We're all in the same boat, basically. We're all the same totally unexplainable happening, simply happening in whatever way it happens. So there can be a sense of real love for every expression, even though certain expressions are dangerous and we acknowledge that, and certain expressions might, you know, certain individuals, apparent individuals, we might find to be very aggravating, somehow there can also be a great feeling of acceptance and love for that expression. All of which is very mysterious. It's to even describe it as fulfillment or completeness or joy or love is ultimately limited as well. It's not really all of that. Now, this quote from this book of Robert Adams' teachings, when I met Robert Adams, his teaching was very, very simple. And this book, Silence of the Heart, was put together by a group in the States. They had certain recordings of his teaching at a different time, and it seems at that time he was using pretty much every expression I've ever heard of, every way of approaching this that I've ever heard of, and so there was lots that I didn't relate to. And so this particular comment about grace, grace is already here, you simply have to be quiet enough to pick it up. Well, I mean, ultimately that's a fallacy, because there isn't any you separate from grace needing to pick it up. If you're moved to meditate and moved to live a silent life or a quiet life to a certain degree, that's just the movement of the totally unexplainable happening of the moment. It's not, you know, if it seems like there are certain changes coming in you from that, it's not a situation of you picking up something else. It's all of it is just a totally mysterious dance of the moment. When I met Robert, he was basically pointing out, let's see, he would say, you are not the body, you are not the mind, there is only love. So in my conversations with him, he would explain to me that there's just the happening of this moment. To try to interpret it as a body or a mind is totally ridiculous. It's just a fantasy to try to interpret it in that way. And ultimately, he would say, you know, he would invite people to come to the I Am meditation. So we would all sit together and say, I am, I am, I am. And then we would stop saying I am, and we would just rest as the amness. There wouldn't be even the intellectual interpretation, I am. So he was, again, like so many, inviting an acknowledgement of the entire happening of the moment without a focus on intellectual concepts, without a focus on these interpretations of the happening of this moment. So at that time, he was just jumping over any kind of description. He wouldn't be coming out with statements like, grace is here, and if you're quiet enough, you can pick it up, and the grace that flows from the silence will transform us. I mean, he wasn't even saying there wasn't us to transform when I ran across him. But this isn't to say that these are incorrect teachings. I mean, these are just various ways that people get invited to the mysterious happening of the moment. And in this book, Silence of the Heart, he uses, as I said, pretty much all the ways of pointing, almost none of which I really relate to in any strong way. There are portions in that book, Silence of the Heart, where he is just saying, there's just this totally unexplainable happening, so just trust it. Turn yourself over totally to the happening, to the power that moves everything, which is just the happening. The happening is just doing whatever it does. All right, so that brings us to the end of the questions that were sent in. I want to make some comments, some general comments about this as well. So recently, actually the other day at the monthly gathering here in Winnipeg, somebody ultimately towards the end of the session began expressing a sense of meaninglessness to all of this, basically saying that, you know, that what I'm saying is we're just a bunch of zombies walking around and that there's no meaning to anything. But that's not what I'm saying. If you're basically, I pointed out the other day to this person that that's another storyline. When I say that, you know, when I enter the general storylines that we carry and I start pointing out that we don't create our basic needs, our interests, our concerns, we don't create our abilities, we don't create our loves, our main interests in life, we don't create our lack of abilities in life. That's not to eventually say that we're zombies being pushed around by the forces of nature. So when I say that our basic needs are an expression of nature, our basic concerns are an expression of nature, our basic interests are an expression of nature, our abilities are an expression of nature, that's not saying that we're something separate from nature being pushed around by the laws of nature. What it's saying is we are the dance of existence itself, the dance of nature. So to say that everything is a movement of nature is basically like saying there is only the movement of the universe. So ultimately, again, from this non-dual perspective, we're not ultimately trying to come up with another storyline, some other storyline that's different to the storyline we already carry. We're instead acknowledging the limitations of all storylines, and maybe the focus then will, the strong focus on storylines will relax and move to a broader acknowledgement of the totally mysterious movement of this moment, the vibrant happening of this moment. So again, we could, you know, we could connect with this to some degree by simply sitting here and thinking the question, what is there when there is no thinking? Because if we acknowledge that all of the intellectual interpretations have to be incorrect in some way, then to really come to what actually is, we would have to acknowledge what is without an intellectual interpretation or without a focus on an intellectual interpretation. So we can think the question, what is there when there is no thinking? And for a moment at the end of that question, there isn't any concept. So what remains? Acknowledge that. Feel that, be that, that which remains when there is no thinking. And then in the next moment, the thought is going to come back as an expression of whatever that is that's remaining. The thoughts are also a portion of that vibrant sense of presence, that vibrant happening. And ultimately, we don't know what that movement of thought is. What we call intellectual interpretations, we don't really know what that is. So even to call that intellectual interpretation is incorrect. And so maybe we begin to acknowledge something that's not a thought, something that can't ultimately be described, and something that nobody is doing. And in fact, there isn't anybody existing apart from that. So it's not that this happening is pushing a whole bunch of human beings around, that this mysterious happening has certain laws and it's forcing human beings to act like robots. That's not what it is. What we call human beings is this vibrant, mysterious dance. We don't exist as anything apart from it. So, you know, if I was being poetic, I could say we are the wild, exotic dance of existence itself, the totally free, wild, exotic dance of existence itself. But that's nice. It sounds nice, but it's sloppy. Whatever this is, you can't say anything about it ultimately. It's just this. And whatever it is, it's just happening on its own. And we don't exist as anything apart from it. So what are we left with if we acknowledge that? So there's just this happening of this moment, what we call the happening of this moment. There's no way to ultimately say what it is, but here it is, happening, even if we don't say anything about it. Even if we don't call a door, what we're pointing to with the word door still happens. Even if we don't call the breath, what the word breath points to still happens, still makes itself obvious. When we came out of the womb, this wasn't called my breath and my awareness and my body and my vibrant bodily sensations. There wasn't any label for any of it, but it was still making itself obvious, whatever it is. So there's this vibrant, unexplainable happening, ultimately unexplainable, and it's expressing whatever it expresses. So what we call a human being moving through life is ultimately this totally unexplainable happening, just happening whatever way it's happening. Now, within the world of stories and the world of apparent forms, it can be acknowledged that no two forms are ever identical. So in this totally mysterious happening, we have this apparent form that we call me. And that's going to be a unique expression. So what we call our needs, our interests, our concerns, our abilities and our lack of abilities, that's going to be unique for every apparent person. And life is going to express whatever that is. So one person might be good at sports, another person might be good at art, another person might be good at business, whatever. However you're expressed. But that doesn't mean you're something separate from the dance of existence, being pushed around by the dance of existence. You are the movement of nature, the movement of the universe. You're a portion of that. And if we try to look at the various apparent forms, each one is unique. So your particular portion of the dance of the universe is unique. You're like the arising of a little wave in a big ocean. You're still the ocean. You're not something separate from the ocean. You're just the ocean appearing to be a certain way in a certain moment. And so our so-called body arises as a movement of this totally unexplainable happening. It's a portion of this totally unexplainable happening. The thoughts arise as a portion of this totally unexplainable happening. The needs, the interests, the concerns, the abilities, the lack of abilities, they all arise as a portion of this unexplainable happening. They are this unexplainable happening, just moving freely, expressing itself in whatever way it expresses itself. It's only in our little stories that we start saying, oh, it's me separate from everything else, and it's me directing myself, and it's me being responsible, and it's me having successes and failures. If we drop all those stories, there's just this totally, just this, whatever this is, expressing itself in whatever way it expresses itself, and we don't exist as anything apart from that. So in that, the wonderful thing is that it doesn't matter how unique you are, part of your life, your apparent life journey will be a mixed bag of things. You will have particular interests, particular loves. All you have to do is acknowledge them. Whatever your interests are and whatever your loves are, those add the meaning to your life. You can't give it any intellectual meaning because there's really no explanation for any of this But the fact still remains that even if you don't have an intellectual description of existence, there are certain things you're interested in, certain things that you love, certain things you enjoy, certain people you relate to. All of that carries a great sense of meaning, not intellectually, but just on the level of feeling. Your life will have joys, it will have sorrows, it will have clarity, it will have confusion. There will be certain interests, a certain apparent direction. You don't ultimately know what any of that's going to be ahead of time. So essentially we end up acknowledging a magical mystery tour, a magical dance of ever-shifting appearances, all of which is rich in its expression. And the richness is in the great variety of apparent expression, the joys and the sorrows, the clarity and the confusion, the calm and the anxiety, all of it mixed together. You don't know what's coming in the next moment. You don't know where it's all, how it's ultimately going to express itself. But we don't have to really be concerned, because it's not the doing of a particular human being. We're not causing it to happen. And ultimately, there's no particular human being that's going to be ultimately hurt by it, because we are the dance of the universe itself, or more succinctly, this totally mysterious happening right now. We don't exist as anything apart from that. We don't have any apparent form or particular form. We have an apparent form. But we were an eighth of an inch long in our mother's womb at one time. We were 6 inches long in our mother's womb. Then we were outside of our mother's womb, and we were a foot and a half long, 2 feet long, 3 feet tall, 4 feet tall, 5 feet tall. We don't have any particular form. We're always changing. Right now, whatever we seem to be isn't a particular form. We're changing. We're aging. And in some way, the happening that we are will shift so that it no longer appears to be a human being, but it doesn't stop being the dance of this totally unexplainable happening. The unexplainable happening just expresses itself in a different way. It's also the case that no two moments are identical. Whatever this is, it's continuously creative. No two apparent forms are identical. No two moments are identical. So whatever this is, it's an endlessly creative dance. So it's obviously not a robotic existence. It's not some robot-like creature being pushed around by the forces of nature. We are, I mean, you could say we're a biological machine, but that means we're an ever-creative event. And there's no way of knowing what's coming. There might be portions of your life that seem to hold great suffering, and there may be other portions of your life later on that hold great joy. On a day-to-day basis, there will be moments of joy and moments of sorrow, moments of clarity, moments of confusion, moments of confidence and moments of anxiety. Or there may be periods in your life where these things move from one to the other. And it may be that even on a daily basis where they shift around quite a bit on a daily basis, that over a longer period of time, it may seem that one aspect is somehow more prominent. And at another period of your life, some other aspect may be more prominent. There's no way of saying what's coming. So it's like being at the wildest theme park in existence. It is existence itself, the universe itself. But we're not somebody in the theme park. We are the theme park. We're not somebody on the wild ride of existence. We are the wild ride of existence. So if in considering any of my comments here, you find yourself slipping into some storyline that's saying, oh, he's saying that we're just robots, we're just zombies. We're not free. We're kind of just moving around like robots on a day-to-day basis. That's not what I'm saying. When I start to point out that our usual stories about being a person that's moving independently, a person who's deciding the direction they're going to go in life, when I start to question those stories and I point out that in that so-called decision-making process, we're moved by our needs, our interests, our concerns, our loves, and we can only function on our abilities and our lack of abilities, and none of that is our creation. That's not trying to ultimately say that we're robots being pushed around by the forces of nature. I'm simply pointing out that everything that we are is an expression of nature because we don't exist as anything separate from the expression of nature. We are the wild, free, exotic dance of existence itself. What we call me, I, we, were simply portions of the wild, exotic dance of existence. So when I question our usual storylines, I'm not trying to replace that with another storyline that says, oh, I'm a robot, or oh, I'm a zombie, unable to make any decisions for myself, that somehow I'm existing separate from the laws of the universe, and I'm being pushed around by the laws of the universe. It's not saying that. I'm saying no description ultimately applies to what's happening here. So I'm always asking you to acknowledge what's here without all of your intellectual concepts, without all of your distorted interpretations, your distorted intellectual interpretations of name and form. Those names and those, the idea of form and the idea of things might be helpful on a day-to-day basis if we're going to bake a cake or build a bridge or plan a trip. That's great. But as far as telling us what reality is, as far as truly describing what this moment is, they're not worth anything, those descriptions. So it becomes an acknowledgement of what's here if we're not focused on some distorted intellectual interpretation. So basically, since all thought is, even though it's maybe practical to some degree and useful to some degree, as far as describing what's actually here, all thought is a distorted interpretation. So then let's ask the question, let's think the question, what is there when there is no thinking? And at the end of the question, what remains? Be that. So at the end of the question, what is there when there is no thinking? For a moment, there's no thought, but it doesn't feel like there's nothing. What remains is not a thought. And the next thought that comes back will be an expression of this more basic happening. And ultimately, we don't even know what that thought is. We only call it a thought. There's no way of saying ultimately what that is. So maybe there may be an acknowledgement of the movement of this moment, the vibrant dynamic of this moment that has no form. It's always the moving and shifting, dancing event. Not a particular event. Let's say eventing, moving, processing, dynamic flow. Perhaps there may be an acknowledgement of that, which is beyond all description. The arising and passing in of description is a mysterious happening. It's a portion of this broader happening of the moment. this broader mysterious happening. And in that, there isn't any zombie-like behavior. There isn't any robotic behavior. You know, we go through life making all these comments about people's personalities. Oh, that person's a wild artist, intuitive, you know, an intuitive artist. And, oh, that accountant over there is just a really conservative, conditioned person who can't break out into their wild intuitive side. But actually, all of that's bullshit. Absolutely every apparent person is the wild and totally free, spontaneous, exotic dance of existence. Just because it expresses one apparent person one way and expresses some other person another way, it doesn't mean that one is wild and free and the other isn't. They're all the wild and free, exotic dance of existence. It's only the arrogant world of thought that is capable of that kind of judgment. The arrogant thought realm that thinks it's describing reality. That feels it has the right to judge all these different aspects of existence. When that thought realm doesn't even have the capability of describing anything real, anything actual. Anyway, that brings us to the end of this session. As I mentioned earlier, if you're finding any of these responses confusing and you want a broader overview of what it is I'm offering here, a very complete and broad overview of what I'm offering here, check out the two main talks on the website. If you go to the Listen drop-down menu, and you scroll down to the heading Talks, you will find the two main talks, one titled An Overview of Spiritual Awakening and the other titled Acknowledging the Moment. And in particular, pay attention to that Acknowledging the Moment, because ultimately, this is the invitation. It's an invitation to the actual happening of this moment, rather than remaining focused on an intellectual consideration of non-duality. In non-duality, ultimately, there is no non-duality. There is no duality, and there is no non-duality, because the acknowledgement of so-called non-duality is that there isn't any way to classify what's happening here and now in any kind of true fashion. There's just this, whatever this is, doing whatever it's doing. Whatever's occurring in this moment is the legitimate expression of what is. Ultimately, from this non-dual perspective, for those that are expressed in this way, this is not the one way that everybody should be looking at life. This is one of the mysterious expressions of life. So if someone is relating to this sense of existence and relates in a very strong way, there will be very little interest in the storylines that come and go. There may be, like, as any kind of, there won't be any reliance on those storylines as being some ultimate release. There won't be any hope that those storylines are going to offer any freedom, because there is no freedom in storyline. The wild and free dance of this moment can't be confined in a story. It can't even be confined in terms of freedom and confinement. So from this non-dual, what's this so-called non-dual sense of existence, it's an acknowledgement of this basic happening of the moment without an urge to define it And so the thoughts, what we call the thoughts, will come and go as part of this movement, this vibrant dynamic of the moment. But this happening has no particular form. It's never going to arrive any place in particular. To acknowledge this, there may be moments of joy. There may be moments of feeling really fulfilled, a real fullness. There may be a sense of what we call love, but even that's going to be moving and shifting and dancing, because whatever this is has no ultimate form. And again, this is all simply for your consideration. So until next time, I hope life offers you only good things. However, I know for a fact it's going to offer you a mixed bag of things. So until next time, take care. Bye.